Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Welcome to On Driven on Joy 94.9, today with Howe, Mark and Hugh. On today's show, we'll be talking to Ravi, who is a counsellor with mostly young people who have various challenges, including drugs, alcohol and mental health problems. Not all his patients are gay, but some are, and today we'd like to talk to Ravi about what challenges are for them. If you'd like to ask Ravi a question, please email onair@joy.org.au or SMS 0427JOY949, and I'm sure Ravi will do his best to answer your question. As usual, we have another interesting chat coming up here on Driven today, so stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Welcome to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Mark, Howe and Hugh. And our guest today is Ravi, who is a counsellor with young people with various challenges in life. Ravi originally comes from Bombay in India, but did study in India and Hong Kong before coming to Australia with his partner. Welcome to Orange Ribbon, Ravi.
Thank you, Hugh.
Now,
So, Ravi, would you? One of the things, sort of, in your sort of remit is sort of counselling and looking after young people. There's been a lot of sort of discussion in the press, we call it, about the way Beyond Blue has been sort of either ignoring, I suppose, is one way that people have put it, but haven't really focused on how the they're looking after the gay community. What's your sort of understanding of that?
Thanks for that. Let's be fair to Beyond Blue.
Yep.
They are part of a mainstream organization. And at the end of the day, they get their funding from the mainstream organizations. They have tried and they are still focusing, but it's not very direct. So they have done one survey, which has been pretty comprehensive. They have looked at all literature review with regards to gay and lesbian and youth around the world. And they have that. Unfortunately, it's kind of buried in that whole website of theirs. Mm-hmm. Because their website is the most important thing for them. So if you're going to look for it, you will find it. But unfortunately, even after you find it, you'll find a lot of research which is kind of watered down. So they've taken the main issue which they are funded for is depression. And so they've taken around 354 surveys around the world, but they've kind of watered it down to around 50, which they think are relevant. And from there, what they found, which is pretty obvious to any one of us, is that surprise, surprise, that gay and lesbian people have a higher rate of depression, mm-hmm. which is a big bombshell for everybody else, but we all know it.
Yeah. Can I just point out one thing? I did look at Beyond Blue on the net, and they've got a section on what causes depression, and they've got a whole list of all the different things that causes depression, and there's nothing there to mention homosexuality.
That's why I said you need to look really closely, mm. because they have the survey. They also have two pamphlets, but if you're going to do a scan through it, you'll find that you'll have to really look for it. And when you find it, you'll find there's one pamphlet on gay and lesbian and transgender people around Australia. But they also have one on youth.
Right.
But when they say that, they don't really speak about specific things. So if you have to look at the research box speaks about really specific things like risk and protective factors. And again, no surprises there that gay and lesbian people are at higher risk because they can't even go to a doctor and say they're gay because that would put them at a risk. They can't have relationships because that'll put them in relationships are not that easy as compared to the heterosexual population. So they do have it, but it's not really there unless you really look for it.
Right.
But isn't that the problem? I mean, the whole point of the website is to cater to the Joe public, so to speak. And if you really have to look for it, and because of your profession, you can actually go and investigate and actually find that information. And it's almost like you have to be a detective in order to actually go through all the different information on that website in order to find this little piece. I mean, isn't that's part of, I mean, from me sitting here who doesn't know or isn't from the profession, wouldn't I feel that there is a bit of discrimination there then? Because the fact that I can't, if I have depression and I want to have a look at the website, then I can't actually find anything there that would be relevant for me.
You're completely right. However, it's not just Beyond Blue. It's the whole representation of the whole Australian culture.
Yeah.
So when you look at research and you look at the whole thing, that there is a need to look at inclusion of sexual identity amongst all research. And that includes the census, the National Health Survey. It also includes looking at how funding is done, because a lot of this is about money. And money is not really as important for people who are gay and lesbian as compared to the wider population. So there is a need for politicians and for research grants to focus on making it a kind of a requirement that sexual identity and gender identity is part of that survey. And if you can't do that, the funding goes mainly for people who are, you know, just basically a tokenism there. So it's not just Beyond Blue, it's all Australia.
Right, so it's more that mainstream funding is sort of ignoring, or not ignoring necessarily, but not focusing on that specific area, and that's why it's sort of going under the radar a bit.
Sorry, it is looking at gay and lesbian and transgender populations with regards to HIV, because that's where they think we are. And we are at risk, and so, but it doesn't look at it in terms of mental health.
I would just like to say at this point, if you're listening and you do have some anxieties or questions, or there is an info line on Beyond Blue, the number is 1-300-224-636, or you can find it on the internet, Beyond Blue. If you just Google Beyond Blue, it will bring up. And but as we said, if you're gay and lesbian, you do have to really look and to find the information for yourself. Why, Ravi, do you think it's one little page, and it took me minutes to find it, but minutes is a long time if somebody's depressed or have mental health problems looking for something. Do you think that people looking through this would give up and think there's nothing there for gay and lesbians?
You're completely right, you, because, I mean, they look at depression. They don't look at depression being gay or lesbian or transgender. And really, it is got, like we have in the sexual health part of it, we have very specific promotion, health promotion going on with regards to sexual health for gay and lesbian people. Similarly, there needs to be a kind of a direct kind of a basically work towards promotion for young people and for gay and lesbian people for mental health, which really is somebody has to take an initiative with that.
Okay. Welcome back to Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9 with Hugh, Mark and Howe. And our guest today is Ravi, who is a counsellor with young people who have various challenges with mental health and depression, just being two of the things that he deals with. Ravi, could you tell us just a little bit about what you encounter with the gay and lesbian youth who have these problems?
Well, I work with young people, and most of them, at the end of the day, there's this whole thing about tokenism, because when we work, we look at people and we work with the wider population, and then we get people who are young and who are gay and lesbian. However, not everyone who's young and gay and lesbian come to us. So there's a big problem there with regards to the fact that most counselors, what we see, are like at the tip of the iceberg. And really, we need to keep that in mind, because I would like to encourage young and gay and lesbian people to see that there is support there.
Just doing some research on this show, one thing I found was it seemed that the instance of anxiety and depression seems to be higher in the gay and lesbian youth community, but also they reaching out to look for support of that is actually less, so that there's more people with that, but actually less people searching out professional help. Is that your...
I would say there are people who are out there right now who want to talk and who want to reach out, but there are structural issues. Right. As simple as, look, when I came here because I was gay, and I had a partner who was Chinese. And I got sponsorship, and I got here and got my PR. But to my biggest surprise here was the fact that the whole Commonwealth government doesn't even now encourage us to have any kind of rights. With the great difficulty, we managed to get some kind of rights. But however, it's still very, very behind as compared to Europe and the rest of the world. So today, if somebody who's gay and young, they don't have a footy player who comes out and says they're gay. They don't have role models. They don't have people out there in the community who can say, right, you need to get some support. Because anytime this whole discrimination, which really is so hard for a young person, they're right there. They're listening to us. But however, to get that step to make us make them think, okay, I need to talk to someone and feel safe, is very hard.
Yep.
What's the main thing that young gay and lesbian people get depressed over?
Well, there are two kinds of depression. The first one is what we call clinical, and the other one is which is called reactive. However, in the reactive stream, I think a lot of things which we talk about depression is really not really the fault of the young person. Or even because basically at the end of the day, what happens is they don't have a choice. They can't even go and talk to someone. If they say it, because if you look at the research, there's a high degree of victimization. There's a high degree of abuse. They can't even go up to a doctor.
Abuse because they're gay?
Abuse because if they are perceived to be in any way not normal.
Okay. So if they're effeminate or something like this,
that's right.
It makes it worse.
So just
for them.
In school with bullying that sort of thing.
So if you were young and you were attracted to the opposite sex or even questioning your identity, that would be considered as not normal. And you would be pounded on straight from your family all the way down to the structures which come all around Australian society.
Yeah,
rejection must be one of the on top of the list of gay and lesbian youth. Rejection by their family or friends. Do you come across that?
There is this whole fear out there. Some of that fear is about rejection, but some of the fear may not be real. Some of the fear must be perceived. But at the end of the day, there is this whole issue where somebody who is growing up, young. Honey, and looking at being attracted to somebody who's not really the kind of a mold which kind of fits in. And some of them may not even be gay. They might be questioning because, and you're 14 or 15 or 16, you really don't know what you are. You're really looking at being attracted and trying to define yourself. And in that particular stage, you need an atmosphere of encouragement and say, okay, you are what you are. Mm. But that doesn't really happen. You're supposed to confirm. If you don't confirm, you're not normal.
Just thinking with over my lifetime, that it seems that in the current sort of media, there are starting to be some role models out there, and I'm wondering, is that helping to empower the youth of today? Is it are they feeling more able to be out or to at least seek advice and help?
I hope so, but however, I don't think it's enough. All schools, all situations where there are social structures need to come out with the fact that people's sexuality is theirs, and it's their sacred right to question. It's the sacred right to figure out who they are. However, that really doesn't come. You come with the default button, which is basically either you're straight or you're not normal. Mm-hmm. And many people there are not really looking at the fact that they're gay or lesbian. They're looking at the fact they're not normal.
Yeah. One thing that strikes me, do you ever get any gay coming along who come along and say, I don't want to be gay and lesbian because I'm too different?
Plenty.
And what's the answer you give them?
Well, I mean, the questioning part of it is really important. And I think that questioning part really is a difficult part for most of us because we have stereotypes. And I'm sorry to say, but a lot of stereotypes are either you're gay or you're not gay.
Okay.
And when I speak to a young person, I think the most important thing is who you are, is what you are. And what you are is basically questioning, and in that you're developing who you are. And so it's not about sitting there and finding a prescription. It's about sitting there and working with someone who's questioning.
Mm.
And in that questioning, they kind of develop what works with them.
Yeah. And just thinking about when you talk about when you're speaking to youth you've got, a lot of people, if they're thinking about needing to ask for advice and they may be worried about how they do it and who they speak to, and there's sort of this preconceived idea of walking into an oak paneled room and lying on a couch. And I mean, can you explain a bit about what a counseling session involves or sort of how that happens?
Well, I'm really sorry to tell you, do not have a couch. And I'm really not into finding out what is the problem, because in my opinion, there is no problem in the world. People are not broken.
Yep.
There's nobody who's broken. We have what you call 100 billion neurons in our brains, which is really, really the most important thing. And we can learn. And importantly in that, we can self-actualize. So when people come, at least to see me, there might be a bit of fear, like they're going to a dentist.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm
thinking. And they come in and they say, they kind of assume that, you know, that something's wrong with them. So the first approach is to say, whatever you are, whether it's a mental health issue, whether it is anything with regards to you, what you have there is a fantastic system which you can learn and change. And learning and changing is about looking at what's working, not what is not working.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you focus on what's not working, you can spend, you know, years of therapy, but you won't find what's working.
How long would somebody have to attend a session with you if they're depressed over their sexuality?
Look, I mean, when somebody, for example, had somebody who came in and there were plenty of structural issues. He was from a suburb where he grew up and nobody around him he knew was gay. And he was terrified. There's a bit of fear there. So we're not looking really at one fixed thing called depression. He was going through what I call panic attacks. And then through what I call resignation, because there was no choice. So a lot of the focus was basically what you call internalized homophobia, which basically, I'm sorry to say, but all of us, including myself, kind of have to work through, which is we kind of, there's no right way to say it, but there's a kind of way of self-hatred.
Exactly. I think we've all been through that as a young youth.
So working through that and saying to someone, like this young man, saying that you are what you are, and whatever you are, there's this possibility that whatever you are is, it's really, you know, you're finding that friendship with yourself, finding that way to accept and acknowledge who you are, takes time. But once that happens, the other part of it is quite easy.
Joy 94.9 is a GLB TIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Welcome back to Orange Ribbon with Mark, Hugh and Hal. And our guest today is Ravi, who's a counsellor, and he's been mainly working with youth counselling. And today's topic, we've been mainly talking about gay and lesbian youths.
I was just going to say, there is an info line that people can call if they do have any problems with depression or mental health.
Yep, so that number is part of the Beyond Blue website. The number is 1-300-22-46-36. That's 1-300-22-46-36. And they've also got a website, which is www.youthbeyondblue.com. So there's information there that can help anyone that's out there needs it.
Yeah, and before the break, we were talking about some of the issues that Ravi has encountered in his work with gay and lesbian youth, and there was this, and then a lot of the work revolve around getting a lot of the young people to have this acknowledgement that they're gay or lesbian, and how to actually achieve that. Do you find that a lot of the time that's different people takes different period of time in order to get to that position of acknowledgement or
one of the beauty of working with young people is that they are very resilient. And I don't know about other counselors, but I have enormous faith in them. But the problem here is that a lot of people do not even consider the possibility that they can look for help.
Yeah.
Well, and once they start looking for help, there's a lot of help out there. So I would say that once they get to a situation where they can talk to someone, they're already looking at finding something for help.
Just so we can let people know, how much does it cost them personally to go to somebody like yourself, a counsellor, or is it funded by the government?
With regards to funding of the government, we have something called the Better Access to Mental Health Services, which basically means that you get a referral from a GP.
Right.
And once you get a referral from a GP, you can see a counsellor. And you, many counsellors do bulk billing. So basically means it won't cost you anything.
Right. But they do have to go and see a doctor first.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there is this little hurdle in the middle.
I think what we're trying to get at is the fact that a lot of young people would be, you know, the doctor that they see is the family doctor or the doctor they've seen since they were quite young, and then a doctor that knows their family. And so that's all already is a bit of an like impediment for them, because if they go and see this doctor that they knows and they're already quite afraid about coming out or about their own sexual identity and all that, doesn't that already stops a lot of the teenagers from actually of actually seeking that initial step of help in terms of getting a referral to a counsellor?
There's a way around it. You don't have to go to your family doctor.
Mm.
You can basically, with young people, they have absolutely control over going to the internet. So look around you, find a GP who's not your family doctor. Come back and don't tell him many things. Just say you're depressed. You don't have to say to your GP that you are gay. All you can say is, I'm depressed and I need counseling. And when you are in that situation, what the GP does, and they're not doing you a favor, they get money for giving you a referral. So they get $120 around that to give you a referral. So basically take control. Find a way to see a GP you don't know and you don't have to meet again and get a referral.
So I could just turn up at a GP, say, I'm feeling depressed, please can I get a referral, and basically the GP will fill out a form, and
that's right,
bang, job done.
Let's cool. Talk a little bit about gay teen suicide and self-harm. How bad is it in the gay and lesbian youth, is this with suicides, for example?
Let's be clear here. The first thing when you talk about suicidally, it's not the people who come and see me, because people who really are suicidal may actually kill themselves without coming to see me.
Right.
So to me, suicide is a cry for help. And really, it's just the last call of help. And when you're talking of self-harm, what you're talking about is the degree of pain which people keep inside them. And there's no outlet. So when there's no outlet, sometimes people do things which you and me might find unpleasant, which is like cutting themselves, which has got nothing to do with killing themselves. It's got to do with the fact they're in so much pain that by cutting themselves, they find relief.
I see. Do you come across that much? Or?
Unfortunately, I get a fair share of what we call suicidally, between people being suicidal or harming themselves. But they're two different baskets. What we do is called a risk assessment. And in that risk assessment, what we work with people is trying to work out a way where we can find out what they're thinking of. And if they're thinking about it and they talk about it, I think the first step is when they're talking about it is the problem's kind of manageable, because we can work with them to make sure that they won't harm themselves or kill themselves.
And just on that, one of the things you were just talking about off air was the difference between acknowledgement and acceptance of some of these issues. Would you like to explain a bit more what you mean there?
There are many things in life we can't change. Just a very simple example, I do not like a red light. It's there when I'm driving. But if I am not going to acknowledge it, I'm going to get run over by something else. So acknowledging basically means that there are plenty of things in life where we get stuck with, but it's there. Accepting is maybe a little further than that, which is basically saying, okay, this is me and I can be able to accept it. So many times I recommend to young people is that maybe you have many problems, but if you start acknowledging them, you can at least know who you are and where you're coming from.
We'll come back to this discussion with Ravi. This is Orange Ribbon on Joy 94.9.
Email onair@joy.org.au.
Now, I believe we have a message.
Yes, we've received a message from a listener, and they said that we can. The Action Centre would be a good place for young people, and the Action Centre is part of the Family Planning Victoria, and within their services, there is service for sexual identity, supporting same-sex attracted young people.
So just to give you the information on that, the website is fpv, fpv.org.au. That's FPV for Family Planning Victoria.org.au. And the Action Centre number is 1800 013 952. That's 1800 013 952.
So we're talking to Ravi today, and Ravi's a counsellor with young people, and we're talking about different issues here. One of them, mental health, depression, suicide. We've covered quite a lot, actually. What about overseas students, Ravi? What's the issues with them? And I'm not just talking about...
Can you rephrase that a little bit differently?
Okay, sorry.
What are the issues that affects people from overseas?
And you mean gay and lesbian issues, or you mean all issues?
Well, I think we will focus in general.
In general, there's a whole issue of acculturation. You come in, you're kind of very excited, and you kind of done your application. You came in here, and you landed. And suddenly, you've got the biggest problem, I think, if you're looking at a general issue, is finding a place to live. Because nobody actually tells you that you've got to come here, and you've got to pay and find a place to live. Once you kind of settle in, what the second issue is basically to meet somebody called an Australian. Because what happens is that most overseas students, I'm generalizing here, so forgive me, but a lot of and most overseas students socialize amongst each other. So if you're Chinese, you meet with Chinese people. If you're Indian, you meet with Indian people. So you go through 3 years or 5 years of your education, and you don't meet a single person who's called Australian outside your community.
Right.
Mm. And do you have a lot of sort of students that come to you for your services where they're struggling because of those cultural identities or even moving into a new country? I mean, obviously, I'm originally from the UK, and when I moved here, there are obviously differences, but at least I have a lot of similarities in the Western culture and the language barriers and things like that. So I presume it'd be much harder for someone from other countries to come in and just try to acclimatize to Australia.
I agree completely. However, I think that overseas students are much more resilient and much more smarter in some ways because they're paying a lot of money. So when you pay a lot of money, you in generally have a lot more motivation to do well. But it becomes very single-minded. Mm-hmm. So you kind of focus mainly on doing well. And if you don't do well, it really becomes hard for them. And in terms of generalizing again, saying that overseas students are different, I think that's really unfair because they're all young people. Mm-hmm. So really, you need to also keep in mind that anybody who is young, has finished school, and has gone to uni, have got also similar issues, which are getting to know people, acculturating with everybody else.
I would say that the same sort of thing for someone from, say, country Victoria.
That's right.
Living in a small country town and then suddenly moving to the big city, they probably have similar issues.
That's right.
Yeah.
Or somebody coming from Broadmeadows and who basically has moved in and has gone to a college in the city.
Yeah.
Do you find that some of the overseas students get a bit depressed because they're made by the parents to come to this country and study and they just don't want to be here, basically?
There's certainly a lot more pressure in choosing a career which has got an outcome, and the outcome is something which needs to be successful in their country. Mm. So they may not actually want to do it, but they feel obligated to do it. So if you're looking at, again, stereotyping, a lot of international students are focused on trying to make their family happy, and they have a lot more pressure to succeed. And if they that doesn't mean that anything else. It just means that their individuality, i.e., whether they like engineering or they don't like engineering, doesn't really matter.
Mm. But isn't that part of the issue as well in terms of trying to socialize with the so-called Australian person? Because they come over here, they know their parent has spent a lot of money to get them to study, so they have to do well, which means that they have to focus on that. Which means that most of the time at uni where there's clubs or there's social events that they could attend, but they just, oh no, I can't attend that event because I have to study and I have to, you know, do well with my study. And so they miss out on a lot of these chances to actually go out and actually meet, you know, people that is outside of their very small group of friends, so to speak.
That's a part of it, but a lot of it has also got to do, I'm not being politically correct here, it's got to do with structural changes with or only local students. You know, the fact is that when you and me got educated, we had HECs and we didn't have to work. But the fact is that most local students now have to hold a job, have to work really hard. And so they're not really involved in socializing with the university. So they're basically not there. So they basically come in, do their classes, and they go home. And so there's this big divide because most international students are possibly having a little bit more time to socialize in terms of the fact that they are living around their place than university, whereas quite possibly many local students are living in the suburbs where they are from, and they don't really don't want to socialize. So this is more a question of how the Australian education system has landed up in terms of the fact that most local students do not really are available around the university.
Right. Okay. I actually know a Chinese student who was very depressed at having to live here and wanted to go back home, and said to his parents, you know, I want to come back home. I want to stop studying here in Australia. And they said, no, you're staying there. You know, it's a disgrace if you come back. You know, what are we going to tell the family and friends? And he ended up trying to commit suicide. And even then, they wouldn't give in. And to this day, he's still in Australia. Is that normal? Is that put, is the pressure on overseas students, the parents, because of shame and all the rest of it?
When you look at risk and protective factors, international students are at a higher risk because A, they don't know the culture. B, is they have a lot of pressure, as you mentioned, that they have put a lot of investment there. Like, for example, Chinese students or Indian students may have taken a loan to, you know, and which comes up to a lot of money, maybe 5 or 10 years of their family's, you know, earning capacity to come out here. So that risk in investment and acculturation makes them at a higher risk. And saying that, they really can't invest and not have any returns. So therefore, yes, you're right that many students here get stuck and they're forced in some ways to graduate or not graduate. And so if they don't do well, they feel they're useless. They feel that their life is not really worth living. However, saying that, we need to get past it. As I said, again, let me repeat it very clearly. These thoughts are a cry for help. They're not really actually, you know, wanting to actually end themselves. They don't see an end point. To me, being suicidal is like looking for a permanent solution for a temporary problem. But you don't see it as a temporary problem because in front of you have all of these hurdles, and these hurdles kind of see there's no way out of it. So our focus there is to look for a longer-term solution.
What about when somebody locks himself away? And, I mean, I've known a few people who have discovered they're gay and just don't like it and just leave society almost. They just lock themselves away. What's the answer?
Well, again, it's back to the whole thing I mentioned before about internalized homophobia. And again, a lot of people have additional factors. Maybe it's their culture. Maybe it's their religion. Maybe it's their upbringing. So that becomes even more self-hatred. So basically, I've got people who say, I don't want to be gay. And I say, okay, so what does that look like? And they kind of work through what they need to feel. And again, as I said, the first step is acknowledging who they are and not really telling anyone else. You don't have to tell their mother or their father or their friends. All they need to do is acknowledge where they are. And that's the first step to at least knowing and accepting they are.
I mean, I know accepting who you are is part of the answer. What if they just cannot accept that they're gay? Is there another way for them to, is there another route that they can go? Or, I mean, I think I've put you on the spot here, but not everyone can accept it.
That's what.
No, but the problem, sorry, I'm not butting in, sorry, Ravi, but that's how a lot of these people, because they can't accept it, and that's why all these ex-gay ministry and all these, you know, conversion scheme, all these quacks that's out there was able to take advantage of all these people, because, you know, if you can't acknowledge that you're gay or you know, you have same-sex attraction or something like that, then basically you will go and you'll be very vulnerable to all these quack schemes that's out there that will take advantage of you and turn you into, I mean, I don't want to get into the whole religious thing here because, you know, there's another program right there, but that's a problem. So I think ultimately at the end of the day, if someone is in that position, the only person that can help, well, for me, I think, is that they need to actually understand acknowledge it to themselves and if they want to help themselves, because otherwise they'll be in a very vulnerable position to be taken advantage of.
And I think one of the things to be aware of there as well is being gay is just one thing. It's not I'm the flamboyant queeny person or I'm this or I'm that. It's just one aspect of your personality. And you can probably acknowledge, as you said, rather than accept, even that that's part of you, but it isn't who you necessarily are.
Well, that's true.
Look, I'm just trying to sum all of that. I mean, as always, there's always a lot of emotional reaction to this. I'm just making it very clear that inside you, who you are, nobody else has to know. And coming to terms with who you are is questioning. So you don't have to tell anyone. All you have to do is kind of say, I'm questioning who I am, and that's me.
Well, as you probably realize, because the music almost started, that's the end of our show. Thank you very much, Ravi, for coming in today and talking to us. We do appreciate it. And that's Orange Ribbon for another week. Our thanks to Ravi for taking time out today to chat with us. Also, thanks to those helping out on Joy's reception, Adrian, who's not there at the moment, for providing program support. Coming up next is the Women's Zone, so stay tuned. So stay tuned for a great show. Thanks for joining Howe, Mark and myself. And Orange Ribbon will be back next week at 2 o'clock. So stay with us for the Women's Zone coming up. And from all of us, bye-bye.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.